Hello, everybody, and welcome to Turn to Page Season 5, Book 2 of Dungeons & Dragons Endless Quest to Catch a Thief. Raps, are you ready to catch a thief?
Ooh, I look, yes? Okay. Asterisk.
Oh.
Can I submit myself? Because we are playing in this, I'm looking, I'm seeing either a gnome or maybe a halfling rogue. I'm just worried that, like, someone's going to come up to us and go, hey, can you help me solve a crime? Someone stole a diamond. And we just look down, we're holding a big diamond, and we're like, yeah, slap the cuffs on me, buddy. It was me.
No, you can't submit that.
Oh, okay, perfect. So we need to frame someone for the theft that we obviously committed.
Yeah. Because it is, you are the rogue to catch a thief. I do have to, go ask one question first. In your own words, I feel like I'm going to ask this and you're going to actually have like the dictionary definition. If you, in your own Rhapsody words, were to summarize the difference between a halfling and a gnome, what would you say is the crowning difference between the two, and is there one, or is it all made up? Wait, hold on, don't answer that. I know it's made up.
I have great news. I think, like, in a lot of fantasy settings, a lot of the difference tends to be that halflings are quite mundane, they're quite low magic, they're quite low technology, they tend to represent a more pastoral lifestyle, whereas gnomes tend to represent industry a lot of the time. They tend to be working in mines, they tend to be expansive, they tend like, have, like, technology, union, and civilization kinds of things. To, like, biologically, gnomes less often have hair, I guess.
I guess that's true.
That's the only difference.
I think biologically, I think halflings have pointy ears. I think it's supposed to be like, you know, isn't it supposed to be like, I don't know. In my head, I'm like, halflings are to elves as gnomes are to humans in a way. But the thing that I would say, the biggest, that's just like I just cracked a code. I'm making that up.
No. Because I always conceived of it as gnomes are to dwarves what halflings are to humans.
Yeah, I could see that. But I would say the main differential between a halfling and a gnome is that gnomes are more likely to be a silly billy.
Yep.
That's it. That's what that was all leading up to. I think gnomes are more likely to be a silly billy than a halfling is. If I were to take that'd be my extensive scientific research on the matter. But I don't know. I don't know what we are, but we'll figure it out as we get in. But now that we've got that all set up, we'll know if you need to be. I don't want to say to use your silly Billy voice or not, because I know what your silly Billy voice is, and I don't want you to get tired.
that is the least tiring voice that I do. Right?
Yeah,
that's my normal. I'm currently putting one on.
Yeah, well, do you want to halt adventurer us?
Halt, adventurer, and read these words before you proceed.
You're about to embark on a journey. To where? Only you could possibly say. It is not a journey like any you've been on before, where you start at page one and continue on a straight course until you reach the end. Instead, you'll be presented with many choices along the way. Each time you're faced with one such choice, make your decision from the options given and then follow the direction to proceed once your quest has come to an end, either favorably or, as I'm afraid in some instances it is foretold to, gruesomely, return to the beginning and start again. This is not a journey. Oh, that's a shame.
Oh, no.
Wait, the sentence continues.
Wow.
For those who prefer to sit back and let others make the tricky decisions, this is a journey for a leader, a true hero. One who is not afraid to explore the depths of Skullport, steal from a beholder, or fight for the freedom of slaves. If this doesn't sound like you...
Raps, keep reading, it sounds like me. Go.
Turn back now and forget the way you even came! But if this whiff of adventure has whet your appetite, then forward with you, my friend. And good luck.
That sounds so, like, so much like me for real. Please keep reading. I have to say, very presumptuous, it's not like a journey, it's not like any journey you've ever been on before. Where you start on page one and continue on.
Buddy, there's four seasons of us being on these journeys.
We have not been on any adventure where you start on page one and you continue to the page end. save for almost the Animorphs books.
Do you think the title is Turn to Next Page? No.
No, that's going to be our spinoff where we just straight up just read a book. That's our audio book company.
I can totally see that.
All right. Starting off.
You little thief!
The hooded noblewoman says as she leans over you, your hand caught in her vice-like grip.
You finally tried to rob the wrong person, haven't you?
We just started. She sounds more amused than angry, but you wonder if the luck you've relied on for most of your life has finally run out. As you gaze up at the woman staring back at you from under the cowl of a voluminous cloak, you realize that you've just tried to pick the pocket of none other than Laryl Silverhand, the open lord of Waterdeep. Well, sorry. If you'd known, you'd have kept walking, maybe all the way out of the city. You cast about for a way to break free from her, but you see the patrol of the city watch.
Waterdeep's combination local police and militia force
now has you surrounded. Their leader, a rough-looking woman with a middling rank of civilar, makes a gesture, and two of the blades working for her race up and hold your arms tight as cold iron shackles.
I didn't do anything!
You say. You might as well be protesting that the half-moon shining between Waterdeep's rooftop is the noonday sun.
And I suppose a grimy halfling like you has had your hand in Lord Silverhand's pocket just to help her scratch an itch.
Now, Raps, if I hear a silly Billy voice from you, you are doing a bad job because this is a halfling. I'm so sorry.
I'll be as serious as I possibly can.
Please, thank you.
Channel the seriousness of Bilbo Baggins.
Yes, yes. And don't channel the part that gave me nightmares where he goes...
I immediately thought about that and then suppressed the urge.
Well, why shouldn't I have it? The Sivilar says with a haughty laugh, you do your best to look innocent as you give Lord Silverhand a heartfelt shrug. She seemed like an incautious noble who'd wandered into the wrong part of town, and you thought that you'd teach her a gentle lesson in why she should keep a better eye on her coinage. What a nice thing we were doing. It seems that she's going to be your professor tonight instead.
I tripped?
You say with as much honesty as you can fake?
I mean, I apologize for setting myself on her, but surely that's not a crime?
With a wry smile, Lord Silverhand shakes her head at you the way your mother used to when she caught you with your hands in the cookie jar. There will be no lying your way out of this, you can tell.
All this went off to the prison in Castle Waterdeep.
What, no rolling? Aw. The Sivilar orders the men of the City Watch who surround you.
And quickly, we have bigger fish to fry tonight.
It strikes me, Sivilar Jolso, that our little friend here could help us with that.
Lord Silverhand says. She gazes into your eyes.
You seem like a loyal and dutiful citizen of the Waterdeep after all, don't you?
I love Waterdeep more than anything!
You say, eager to please. You're not sure where she's going with this, but if it's anywhere other than jail, you're game to hear more.
Good. Well, I had something stolen from my home tonight.
I didn't have anything to do with that!
You protest?
I have an alibi, probably.
Or you will if your pals back at your favorite tavern hold up their end of your standing bargain.
Don't be stupid.
Jolso says.
The item was stolen by members of our local thieves' guild. Of which you're clearly not a member, and it's already in the hands of their master, Xanathar.
You blanch at the mention of the name. The Xanathar is the title of the leader of the Waterdeep's legendary Thieves Guild. That alone would make him dangerous enough, but the current occupant of that position is a beholder, a floating creature about a yard across with a single eye in its middle and 10 eye stalks, each of which can cast a deadly spell splayed around it. How a ball with eyes on head steal?
Delegation.
How do you get this position?
Interestingly, I think they have to kill the most recent leader.
That's easy. I try and climb the ranks at my local Wendy's the same way, and they say, that's a faux pas. And I'm like, how am I supposed to work my way up here? I just started.
Then they locked me up in the prison, and when I tried to kill the warden, apparently that's not allowed either.
How am I supposed to get ahead in the jail? The system is rigged. I tell you.
They told me to find the biggest guy, and so I did. The CEO of the prison.
Yeah. So the beholder, 10 eye stalks, each of which can cast a deadly spell played around it. It seems you don't get to be the Xanathar without being incredibly powerful to start with. Sounds like it's a little bit of nepotism, if you ask me, but okay. You get some, quote-unquote, being incredibly powerful, a.k.a. my dad was the Xanathar.
Yeah.
All right. You gaze up at the open Lord of the Waterdeep and swallow hard. Bingo. Check it off. Now you know where she's heading with this.
And you need me to get it back.
Silverhand nods.
It's vitally important that we recover it. And we could use the help of someone embedded in the underworld, knowledgeable about its ways, but not loyal to Xanathar. Someone like you?
You eye her suspiciously.
What was stolen?
She purses her lips as though she's not going to tell you, and then she spits it out.
A baby griffin.
I'm on board. You son of a gun, yeah. I'm in. Little animal stolen? Last time this happened, there was a magician who stole a little dog, and we went to the ends of the earth. That didn't go well.
Yeah, we vanquished that man.
Yeah, I think that it was a weird, messy path, but we did get the dog saved, and we did murder the man. I'm pretty sure. That was back in Goosebumps.
Full points.
I will note a reminder. I cannot write down these. Do you have an ability to?
Good point, well made. Let me just quickly pull out my writing utensil. I see last time I was using this book, I was doing matrix transformations. That means it's 8 years old.
I thought you were going to say, that means that was from Grail Quest. I mean, gloat about the fact you have a writing utensil. I always just pushed my finger into the paper so hard that I left dents.
You know what? I think that's worth gloating about. I have to use the lame method here of just using a pen.
Oh, I can afford a pen.
But yes.
all right. Try to bluff your way out, turn to page 6, refuse to help, page 9, agree to help, page 17.
I do want to agree to help because I want to get to the griffin,
yeah.
But I will also note that Lariel Silverhand just walking just perchance in this part of town and needing a thief, it's very convenient. It's just very, it feels like this was an audition.
Yeah. Wait, what's the point with that? As in, like, does that lead you to one of these other ones instead? Is that why you bring that up, or?
It's less that it leads me to one of the other ones instead, and more that I wonder if one of the other paths would include in refusing to help. Like, hey, this is clearly a stitch-up. Like, I'm not gonna go and do Xanathar for you just because you walked around with an open pocket until honey landed, fly landed on the honey, you know?
Especially because you just asked me to steal from him instead.
Yeah.
My only other one that I would lean towards is I'm curious about bluffing our way out because I don't feel like it would go well. But here's the thing. I don't want it to be successful, and I do not want to humor that because it is most important to me that we save and rescue a little creature, a little guy.
Absolutely.
Is so much more important to me than anything else, even making a good podcast. I want to save a little guy.
This little guy. Baby Griffin.
You try and keep the shock from your voice, but you fail.
Does it bite? Yes, but I'd worry about more than the claws.
Lord Silverhand says offhandedly, the way you might describe the qualities of a particular meal.
Even on a baby, those talons are far sharper than the beak.
The ones on the claws? Or the front ones?
You've never tangled with a griffin, but you don't really care about the details of how it will dismember you. You're really just stalling for time. Lord Silverhand can see straight through your pathetic efforts to distract her. She gives you a half-amused smile.
A griffin is the front half of a giant eagle and the back half of a lion,
she says.
What difference does it make which end it uses to tear you apart?
I am less scared of the back half of a lion.
So, oh, yeah.
I mean,
oh,
like...
Oh, 100%.
The scary part of a lion is the front part, to me. Maybe I'm delusional.
It's... No, fully understand. Complete opposite of a horse.
Yeah. 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 It's true. That is the thing. I feel like they picked the less scary part. I don't. An eagle's talons I was going to say it's back feet, but I've just now realized that eagles have 2 feet and not. So.
Yeah, exactly.
This thing is
so the
not
two
just
eagle,
the front half of an eagle. This.
It's all.
A griffin is like 75% of an eagle and 25% of a lion. They need to get this straight.
A griffin is simply an eagle that has a lion instead of a tail.
Exactly. So, I don't know. I think that the talons of an eagle is the scary part for the most.
Absolutely.
So, like, it makes a difference to me. I don't know. But alas, anyways, you rub your chin as if you're considering your decision, even though you've already made it. As dangerous as the griffin might be, disappointing the open lord of Waterdeep is sure to be a great deal more troublesome, or so you believe.
I think I can help you with that. There should be a sizable reward for the creature's return, right?
The Sivilar smacks you in the back of your head.
The only reward you'll receive is to keep your worthless hide out of prison.
You consider showing the woman the pointy end of your knife, but Lord Silverhand waves her off.
That's enough, Sivilar Jolso.
I thought they said that this book wasn't just flipped to the next page, but we gotta...
And yet there's a chunky
setup here. The Sivilar backs away, grumbling. Clearly she'd prefer to deal with you far more brutally than the Lord would like her to. Lord Silverhand turns to you.
If you manage to retrieve the little griffin and return her unharmed, rest assured that I can be quite generous in my gratitude.
You hold back your urge to scoff at her. To think you might actually trust the generosity of a noble, even one as famous and powerful as the Open Lord, might be a bit much. But you don't need to bring her wrath down on you by openly mocking her. If you have the griffin in hand, though, that should be enough to shake loose something from the Lord's pockets. At least that's what you tell yourself.
I gotta say, I get why rogues are so popular now. Just if I didn't know already from like experience, role playing, if we're being this dude instead of wet blanket dwarf, I get it. It is just a little bit more fun to be this guy. So I get it.
I distracted myself for the first time ever. You rub your head and glare at the Sivilar. Reward or not, you rationalize, chasing little monster certainly beats going to jail. Especially since you're not sure that you'd even make it that far in Jolso's custody. Give the Lord your best smile.
That's good enough for me. So, what's our first step? Has the Xanathar issued any demands yet? Some sort of ransom for the griffin's safe return, perhaps?
Lord Silverhand shakes her head. A deep frown creases her brow.
He seems bent on keeping the creature.
You sigh in disappointment.
So he's just going to keep the little tyke indefinitely? Seems like this problem just might take care of itself. Won't the griffin eventually grow large enough to eat him? He'll take the time to train it to be loyal to him.
Jolso says.
We believe he wants to raise it as a mount for one of his lieutenants. Imagine the havoc such a creature could wreak upon our populace if it was left under the control of Xanathar.
You grimace as you give up the idea that the Lord might be able to wait the thieves out. It looks like you don't have much of a choice but to help the city watch find the griffin. At least, if you want to live in Waterdeep and remain outside of one of its fine prisons.
All right.
You say.
I'll do it. I'll find your little griffin and I'll bring it back home. You're gonna have to give me some space to work.
So you can run off on us?
Jolso says with a snarl.
You want me to start poking around the Thieves Guild, right? How many thieves do you think are going to be caught dead talking to me if I waltz up to them with a city guard on my tail?
Jolso opens her mouth to protest, but you cut her off.
If you think they won't see you coming, you're wrong!
He has a point,
Lord Silverhand says. You give them your mom likes me best grin.
Gonna have to trust me,
you tell the Lord.
At least a little bit. Otherwise, this is never gonna work.
Fair enough.
She bends down and gazes right into your eyes.
Don't give me cause to regret it.
Then she turns to Jolso.
I assume you can take it from here. I need to return to my manor.
She gazes at you and then she turns to Jolso. Why is she looking at us twice? The Sivilar gives her a firm nod.
You can rely on us.
Start asking questions around town on page 26 or ask the Sivilar what you should do on page 28. Jolso?
I'm getting bad vibes off Jolso. I don't want to ask Jolso, but... maybe that's why we should.
That's true. I do not like Jolso, but also... I don't like Jolso, but also... I do think this could be one of those, like, they're a little bit of a stinker, but then you kind of they warm up on you. I mean, I will say Matt Forbeck has pulled that trick on us once already.
Okay. Let's give that a little bit of a whirl. Let's ask the Sivilar what we should do.
I admit it,
you say to Jolso.
I've never tried hunting down a kidnapped baby griffin before, so I'm at a loss where to begin.
Don't you think you ought to show me that you can be at least somewhat useful before you give up?
She asks with more than a hint of menace in her voice.
Oh, no.
You shake your head emphatically as you show her the palms of your hands.
I'm not giving up. Not at all. I just wonder if you might have some idea about how I could find this baby griffin of yours.
You mean Lord Silverhands?
Jalso rubs her chin.
Well, if I wanted to meet the master of the Thieves Guild, I might try to pretend I was someone he knew, or at least someone that he might want to know. That's all well and good.
I'm your dad. I know what my dad looks like. I'm your barber. Dad, why'd you become a barber? That is some hitman costume stuff. Like, just the line, pretend.
You're not the usual guy.
Pretend you're someone he knows is such a bad idea. It's like.
Just walk in. I'm you.
I'm your wife of 30 years. Ah, yes, of course. I love you, sweetie. Okay, sorry, that's a cartoon I watched. That's all well and good, you say.
Do you have any idea who might fit that bill?
I don't know.
Jalso sighs in exasperation. Exasperation.
You're supposed to be the one with underworld connections here. Are you aware of any other thieves who live in Waterdeep? You might recall that I'm not actually part of the Thieves Guild.
You tell her.
We freelancers prefer to give the Gilded Thieves their own space. They have a tendency to want to cut us open otherwise.
Jalso remains unimpressed.
You've heard of Maroon the Mast?
She eventually offers. You give her a cautious nod.
He's supposedly the greatest thief in Waterdeep, correct?
She continues, not waiting for your reply.
We've been after him forever.
But no one even seems to know what he looks like.
Seeing where this is headed, you play dumb for the nice Sivilar, hoping that she might somehow take pity on you.
So? He could be a female or a halfling to boot.
So what's stopping you from presenting yourself to the Thieves Guild as Maroon the Mast?
Does Maroon have a band of followers? Perhaps four of them?
Only four followers, exactly.
Maroon has four followers.
Mm-hmm.
Maroon and the four.
The four followers of Maroon.
The four followers. Maroon and the four followers of Maroon. That's... Adam Levine really has to change that band name.
It's still Adam Levine. It's the same guy in charge.
You rattle off a list in your mind that includes the fact that just because you don't know what Maroon looks like does not mean that someone inside the Thieves Guild isn't much wiser about the issue than you. Also, you don't especially relish the idea of the journey to the Thieves Guild headquarters in Skullport. That would mean risking a journey through the Undermountain, which you would rather avoid. But you keep your mouth shut, and you shrug at the Sivilar.
Nothing?
Turn to page 21.
Then it's settled.
Jalso says in the kind of final tone you only hear when someone in her position tells you you're under arrest.
I suppose it is.
You say?
Unless I can come up with a better idea.
The Sivilar glares down at you, sure that you're just trying to waste her time. To be fair, you're hoping that a bit of delaying might work in your favor, but perhaps it's not such a wise idea to be so obvious about that in front of her.
I guess not.
You say with a shrug.
If only Maroon the Mast can get the job done, then Maroon the Mast I shall be.
Jalso favors you with the kind of smile your parents would give you when you proved that you weren't as stupid as they feared. You rub your chin.
The only question is exactly how I should go about it.
Wear a disguise, 31. Just be yourself, 33. Yeah. Or find a wizard to disguise you, page 36. Every single dating article in teen magazines says that you should be yourself.
Oh, sorry. I was reading Teen Vogue the other day, and it recommended that I go find a man in the mountains called Ensorcelus in order to change my form. So it's changed recently, I guess.
Ensorcelus shall remove your braces. And you will be the best.
Allowing
of the
you
ball.
To be more yourself.
You'll be the you that's on the inside. Now your insides are outside.
Like that Treehouse of Horror episode.
Yeah, that gave me, that gave actual me nightmares. Yes, same. Yeah. High five. I was out of town. We watched it in the car on a vacation on a trip up somewhere that, like, I don't know what it was for. It was for a wedding or something. But I was in this big, like, I don't know what happened. I was in, like, a warehouse room, and there were vents everywhere. And I was just like, that freaking gas is in this warehouse, and I know it. Yep. And then I told my, like, family that was there, and they said, yeah, it's real. My cousin told me that that it was real. And I was like, oh, no. And I wanted to die. I hated that.
That feels like you're like at like 9 out of 10 stress in Darkest Dungeon 2, and they were just like, here's 11 more stress.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a stress. Yeah. 9 out of 10, and also Death's Door. Just, all right. It's okay. I tested resolve, and I, you know, never mind. I failed. Let's be honest. I can't fib. Where are we at?
We are deciding whether or not to wear a disguise, be ourselves, or find a wizard to disguise us.
Ah, yes, Teen Vogue. It does sound fun to find a wizard. It sounds fun.
It does sound fun, but I also do like the idea of just being like, no one knows what this guy looks like. It might as well be me.
It's true. I actually like all of these. Being yourself does, in this case scenario, when you were trying to break... You want to commit a bank robbery? Just be yourself. Don't go in with a mask. Don't do anything like... You'll just go up there and tell them, hi, my name is Robert. I am here to rob you. No, don't comment on it. I understand. Everyone always does. I know I could go by Bob.
When I was born and when I was christened Robert Jonathan Banks, didn't really understand the gravity of the situation of what my parents had gifted to me. But as everyone kept talking to me through my life and saying, Rob Banks, Rob Banks, Rob Banks, I was just like, you know, I gotta be myself. I gotta Rob Banks.
It's true. It's all about that internal speech. And when all of that external speech is telling you one thing, it's hard for your internal speech to not just say the same thing over and over. Rob Banks. Sure. Rob Banks, Rob Banks. Rob Banks, Rob Banks. Didn't help that I was saying my name all the time like a Pokemon, but, you know, anyways.
It really didn't help as I was walking into the bank. The security Rob guard Banks. Was on my tail immediately.
Yeah.
Okay, remember to rob the bank today. Remember to rob the bank. Remember to rob the bank. Excuse me?
Yeah. Okay, we should get a decision here. Wear a disguise, be yourself. I'm going to... Let's veto be yourself. As funny as it is, cool. I like the other ideas more, even though I do find that to be very funny.
Let's get a wizard to disguise us.
All right. If you're going to survive all this, no regular handmade disguise will do. You need something magical to help out, or someone. At Jalso's suggestion, you look up the wizard by the name of Grinda Garloth. I mean, that's just a Banjo-Kazooie character. You can't...
Mm-hmm.
Can't... That was just a Banjo-Kazooie noise. You can't... All right. She lives in Mishore, a rundown neighborhood located along the harbor's north shore. How'd you get the name? It's so riddled with poverty and crime that the city watch doesn't even go there. But the civil arc gives you the address. Okay. When you knock on Grinda's door, which is set into the hull of a breached ship that was blasted from the sea decades ago, an old woman opens it and glares at you with undisguised disdain. And we're trusting her to disguise us?
I'm sorry.
You say?
I was looking for a wizard by the name of Garloth.
She sneers at you and then yanks you inside and slams the door behind you.
You can't just stand out there,
she says.
What if someone were to see you? Does Grinda live here?
You say, confused. The woman smooths her hair and picks a random bug from it.
You're looking at her, honey.
She glances up and down at you.
And who am I looking at?
You introduce yourself and explain the predicament. You need to save a baby griffin from the Xanathar or face some hefty jail time. She laughs at you and she reaches down to tussle your hair.
That's a charming tale for such a young child to be spinning, but I fail to see how it has anything to do with me.
She hit us with a don't care, didn't ask.
Don't care, didn't ask, kid.
L plus ratio plus your bald. No, my hair! You don't bother to correct her on her belief that you're a human kid. Instead, you give her your most disarming smile and say,
I was hoping you could give me a proper disguise.
Turn to page 30.
Aren't you just perfect the way you are?
Aw, Grinda says with a giggle, as she reaches down to pinch your cheeks.
Why would anyone ever want to change you?
You hold back an exasperated sigh and let her continue to think you're a child who apparently has a dangerous life.
I need to reach Xanathar, leader of the Thieves Guild, so I can save the baby griffin, but he won't talk to me. But he might talk to Maroon the Mast, whom no one has ever seen, and so no one knows what he looks like.
She says uncertainly.
Exactly!
Grinda scratches her head and a mouse-sized fairy scampers out of her hair and flitters away. She doesn't even seem to notice.
Well, it seems a terrible shame, but assuming I do agree to do this for you, since no one's ever seen Maroon, what should I change you into?
Slick and dangerous. Turn to page 50. Or tall, dark, and powerful. Turn to page 54. Man, this is the hardest question yet. In all. Slick and dangerous, or tall, dark, and powerful. Yes.
Oh, this is a toughie. I mean, with being a dwarf and currently a halfling, I wonder if tall is further from us. But slick? Neither of us have been slick so far. This one's trying, certainly.
Yeah. Maybe we can roleplay a slick and dangerous character better or something. Because it's like, what are we more familiar with? Like, what is our character more familiar with? Maybe slick and dangerous is, like, closer.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Let's do slick and dangerous. Let's start there.
That's not a lot of faith.
I mean, we haven't reached an end yet, so I have to imagine soon.
Yeah, and we never will. Could you make me...
Could you make me look slick and dangerous?
So that was me asking Rhapsody. Rhapsody, I want a makeover. Can you make me slick and dangerous?
Meet me at the Mall of America. We're going to Hot Topic.
Let's go. Can we go to Nickelodeon Universe first? They killed Camp Snoopy and they turned it into Nickelodeon Universe. And I've not been since it's been Nickelodeon Universe. But I've been to the Mall of America, but I've not been. Am I right, Minnesota natives? Anyways.
We can stop there both before and afterwards.
Thank God. Can we go to the Lego store? They have a really big wall of Legos.
I do love that the appeal is the Lego store has Legos. Like, yeah, bud. Yeah, totally do.
You have not, I did not emphasize how big the wall of Legos is. You know? It's tall. It's so tall that at the top, if you look down from above, you can tell that they're not actually Legos in there because they couldn't get up that high. But they have little pictures of Legos on it for show that when you're on the bottom floor and you look up, you're like, oh, wow, they have Legos even all the way up there. But from above, you can see it's a sham.
It's like in a video game where they put static sprites in the
background.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely tree hasn't rendered energy. Anyways, I like that place. It also has Margaritaville and Bubba Gump Shrimp from movie franchises.
I'm sorry, I have to go to both of those. Yeah.
You can sit on famous bench from Forrest Gump. You can sit on recreation of famous bench from Life's Like Box Chocolate and then get okay food after. Anyways.
That does actually sound like a sad outing. Like a very sad
outing. There's some good food there. It's at the Mall of America. It's not there. Sorry. Bubba Gump. Anyways. Where are we? No,
Grindel will purse her lips in a
Grindel will purse her... Hey, that's my line. Grindel, I already stole yours. You don't need to get me back by stealing mine. Grindel purses her lips and gives you a hard look.
Are you sure about this? No complaints!
You tell her.
I promise. All right.
She pulls a crooked wand from the sleeve of her dirty blouse and sets to work. She beckons you over to a workbench and pours a silvery fluid into a crucible set atop it. She plucks a gummy substance from a small tin and places it in the crucible. She taps the crucible with her wand, and a bright tongue of fire appears beneath it. Smoke explodes all around you, and the moment later, you reappear with a small green poisonous frog with bright red eyes. This is some goosebumps!
There you go, honey!
Grinda says to you.
Slick and dangerous. Good luck with your quest!
The thing is, I absolutely 100%, if this was Goosebumps, I could have read that coming from a mile away. Mm-hmm. I did not think we were going to be hit with the most Goosebumps outcome I could have imagined.
Neither.
Wow.
It's been a while since we've been turned into an animal or made small.
Yeah, in like a gin, hee hee, ha ha, hoo hoo, is this what you wish for kind of a way.
Mm-hmm.
There you go, honey. Grinda says to you, slick and dangerous, just good luck on your quest. You flick your tongue for a moment and then hop off to find your destiny, the end.
Rubber.
A page.
Good ending.
Good ending.
I mean, we didn't save the baby griffin, but we did become a baby frog.
And now we don't have to do that job. We're a frog. They're not going to put us in jail. They can't put a frog in jail. What page?
We will be heading to 54 to become tall, dark, and powerful.
If this is another hee hee hoo hoo.
Can you make me tall, dark, and powerful?
You ask the wizard, daring to hope. She scurries off to a work table, beckoning you to follow her. Dumps a bunch of odd things into a crucible and lights the fire beneath it. It's the most I've said the word crucible in my life. She lights a fire beneath it with a tap of her wand. Then she points the wand at you and says a number of things that you don't understand. I relate to that.
The third law of thermodynamics.
not again! She points a wand at you and says things you don't understand. It's school again, baby! A moment later, you find yourself much taller. Grinda gives you a fragment of a shattered mirror, and you see that you now have pointed ears and long white hair. You're wearing a suit of blackened armor that makes you look positively dangerous. Oh my god, we did get both. A drow not to be reckoned with. Grinda totters up behind you and says,
so, what do you think?
Turn to page 51.
I love it!
You say, and you wrap your long arms around Grinda to give her a massive hug. She giggles and blushes like a young maiden with a crush.
I'm so happy for you,
she says with pride.
Now get out there on your little quest and find that griffin friend of yours, or whatever you were looking for.
You thank her profusely and promise to return to regale her with the story of your success. You may have slipped into Grinda's home as a halfling, but you emerge looking every bit the drow warrior sliding through the night shadows as if you're... Wait. Every bit the drow warrior sliding through the night shadows as if you're nothing but a whisper gone before you even ever heard. What a sentence.
Mm.
Let me hit that one again. Just to really sell it. You may have slipped into Grinda's home a halfling, but you emerge looking every bit the drow warrior sliding through the night shadows as if you're nothing but a whisper gone before you're ever heard. Okay, Tumblr page.
Yep. My mother was in the Amazon researching spiders when they killed her. And yeah, she was researching spiders or whatever.
Bonus episode goal. We watch... I forgot the name of that one. Madam Web.
Madam Web. Madam Web and Morbius double feature.
Well, okay. You could get used to this, and you wonder how long the transformation will last. It didn't occur to you to ask if it's permanent, but you don't think you'd mind. Hoping to find a fast way through the Undermount to Skullport, you make your way towards your favorite tavern, the Yawning Portal, where you expect to be able to pick up some advice. You stride into the place and glance around, looking for someone who might be able to help you. Those who see you gape in wonder, and you realize perhaps your disguise isn't quite as subtle as you'd hoped. The drow may be the stuff of legendary adventures, but they're usually on the other end of a sword. At least, when tales of their exploits reach Waterdeep, that is. They make their homes in places like Menzoberranzan, the fabled city of spiders. Why would you pick there? Which sits in the upper... Actually, that's Australia, isn't it?
Yep. Can't believe it, mate.
The fabled city of spiders. It's, which sits in the upper part of the Underdark that sprawls beneath Neverwinter. They're hitting all the faves.
Mm-hmm.
Sprawls beneath Neverwinter, and patrols are the bane of adventurers searching for treasures everywhere. The people of Waterdeep don't care for the drow at all, but you feel powerful enough to not care what they think. You may not be among friends, but you are here to worm your way into the Thieves Guild and not greet pals. As you approach the tavern's bartender, he gives you the side eye that makes you wonder if he's reaching for the sword. Despite that, he comes when you beckon over him.
Drizzt Do'Urden,
he says with a scowl.
I thought I told you I never wanted to see you again. It's not safe for you around here.
He's clearly mistaken you for someone other than Maroon the Masked. You suppose you should have worn an actual mask to complete the disguise, but you decide to roll with it.
Show me a fast way to get to Skullpole from here, and I will trouble you no more.
You negotiate in your huskiest voice. He scratches his chin and then points to a door in the back of the tavern. You nod and nod thanks, and then head towards it. The door opens onto a hallway being used as a pantry, which quickly comes to a dead end. As you search for the secret passage out of the hallway, the door behind you slams shut, plunging the place into blackness. You spin around, blind to the dark, and find a blade rammed straight through your chest. The last words you hear as your life bleeds out of you are,
I told you it wasn't safe, but you wouldn't listen.
The end. Well, beans.
Well, we didn't have a choice as well after becoming Drizzt Do'Urden. So either visit to Glinda gets us killed.
Was there not... There was another choice at Glinda. Not as soon as we got the costume.
Oh, if there is, I have not tracked it. It was before that. It would be 36?
It was before that. There was a step before this, and I'm trying to think what it was.
Oh, there's... we can either not...
Is it
we could get
a
disguise, we could be ourselves, or we could find a wizard.
Yeah, I guess it's back there. Oh, man. All right. I guess it's where
a disguise,
what do you
think? Should we find a mask?
I guess so. To be Maroon the Masked, I think it's a good start. All right. Disguising ourselves. No need to complicate things. You make yourself a cheap mask out of a black bandana with eye holes cut into it. Uh-oh. And you darken your hair with handfuls of soot. Even your mother wouldn't recognize you. Okay. And if she did, she'd start in right away about how you should have been a doctor like your father and your sister.
You look like a villain from a Bard's Tale.
Jossa says.
With a name like Maroon the Masked, what would you expect?
She shrugs her shoulders.
Fair point. Just try not to get yourself killed out there.
Ah, Sivilar, I didn't know you cared.
Before you recover the baby griffin. After that, you're on your own.
Chasen, do you give her a firm nod?
Wish me luck.
If you don't manage to bring that griffin back for me, you're going to need a lot more than luck.
Four.
Now, get moving.
The Sivilar says.
Time's wasting.
Admittedly, you were trying to waste time, hoping that the problem would somehow just solve itself. Mood!
I'm on the case!
You tell Jolso.
Perhaps I should just throw you in jail, straight in jail rather, and save us both the embarrassment of your inevitable failure.
And waste an excellent costume? I spent whole minutes setting this up!
You say, gesturing towards your face. She takes a swing at you with her fist. What? Why? But you scamper out of the way and keep moving.
Don't get your scabbard in a twist!
You shout over your shoulder as you charge into the night.
I'll have your griffin back in good hands in no time at all. You have my word on it.
What good's the word of a thief?
Asks the Sivilar. You wonder the same thing as you decide where to start your hunt. Off to Down Shadow to recruit some help on 38, or down to Skullport on page 45. I feel like last time we were really rewarded by going critical path.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if just going to Skullport is the call.
Yeah, I mean, we're involved in a conspiracy and subterfuge here. The more people we let know, the far more dangerous this becomes.
38 or 45.
Let's head to Skullport on 45. What's the other page?
38. You need to thank Jolso for coming up with this crazy plan to impersonate Maroon the Mask. You didn't think it was going to work. Although your intentions are good, you're feeling positive about the power of your disguise. You find yourself heading into the Underdark, not the subterranean realm known for its strange creatures, but a tavern of the same name over in the Trade Ward. Why would you do that? That's just confusing. Rather than change course and head straight to Skullport. You convince yourself that if or when Jalso catches up with you, you can tell her you were trying to find a member of the Thieves Guild, Topside, who you could follow to their secret headquarters in Skullport. Is this the right path? I feel like it was like, I'd like to do this, and it said, ah, that's great, but no. You can think you want to do that. When you get there...
I guess it was ultimately just like, do you want to seek help or not?
Well, it sounds like we're going to not seek help and then act like we did. When you get there, the half-elf bartender spots your mask and beckons you over. She seems unsure as to who you might be, but she's willing to hazard a guess.
Maroon.
Never one to pass up a golden opportunity to impersonate somebody else, you nod in agreement.
Who else would so brazenly wear a mask in public like this?
Sorry, this is me. What's Maroon's voice?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're not in agreement because you never want to, you know, you always want to jump at the opportunity to impersonate somebody else. You were just acting like somebody else.
Who else would so brazenly wear a mask in public like this?
But why would you come here now?
She asks, confused if someone of your stature would darken her door.
I have business in Skullport, and I was looking for a way to reach it quickly. I heard that you might be able to help me out in that regard.
The bartender's face cracks with a wide smile.
We happen to have a secret passageway in our basement,
she whispers to you. You can't believe your luck when you'd realize your altered destination. You'd been hoping to rest on your feet for a bit before you got the courage for what you'd agreed to do. To remain here now would look suspicious. You stifle the urge to cringe at your fortune.
You don't say. Could you be so kind as to permit me to use this route?
Oh, the great and famous Maroon the Mast. Of course.
The bartender takes you by the hand and leads you into the tavern's back room. At the far corner, she pushes aside a rack of shelves stocked with supplies, exposing a wooden door. She removes the bar on this side of the door and hands you a lit torch from a sconce in the wall, watching you expectantly as you take it. This is some clue, like, library to the whatever, you know, or what is it?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the rooms. The ones in the corners that teleport across the map. This is what this feels like.
Mm-hmm. The secret passage betwixt.
Yeah. Hands you a lit torch from a sconce in the wall, watching you expectantly as you take it. Beyond the open door, you see a set of stairs leading down into the darkness.
I'm so excited,
the bartender says.
You'll have to tell me all about your adventure when you come back.
I certainly will,
you say as you venture down the stairs. The bartender closes the door behind you, and you hear the solid thunk of the door's bar falling into place. Rather than waiting to starve to death in the stairwell, you continue down. After a long hike that meanders deeper and deeper underground, you emerge in the high part of Skullport. Wait, this is for real? I thought this was a trap for real. High part of Skullport, away from the wide river that runs through the cavern that encapsulates it. While you're glad to no longer be in the stairwell, you're not sure that you where you should go next. You cast about for clues as to where the Xanathar might be. There are a few specific suspicious characters and suspicious specific situations around you, as there always are in Skullport, but which is worth investigating. Follow a floating skull, 57. Follow the sound of a crying child, 62. Follow a thief, 64. I mean,
a floating skull or the sound of a crying child didn't steal the griffin.
It's true. I do wonder, because a thief sounds so obvious. I wonder about the floating skull being linked to, like, more kind of, feels a little beholdery.
Mm-hmm. I'm down.
I don't know.
Let's have a look at these floating skulls.
I don't trust myself. And also, I don't trust this decision.
I mean, it's there for a reason. If nothing else, we'll get some cool text.
So what, 57? Are we going to go for the...
Let's do it. Show me skulls.
Ah! Jump scare. It's a picture of a skull. A skull floats overhead and attached to anything at all. Most particularly not a body or a neck. You know, a skull. Fortunately, it doesn't seem interested in you. Instead, it's wandering over the houses of Skullport like a mystic, haunting guard. It's a mystic haunting guard on some kind of unfathomable patrol. You chase after it and thinking that you look. Wait, what? You chase after it thinking that since you're looking for a floating head thing.
A beholder.
A floating skull might somehow lead you to it. Okay. I've been caught.
It had the same idea as you.
I've been caught. Now I don't think it's going to be right. It zips about the sky over Skullport, such as it is, moving rapidly from low rooftops all the way to the ceiling's apex. You climb on top of a ramshackle building so you can keep an eye on it, trying to remain in the shadows as you do. The skull keeps moving, getting further away. You chase it, leaping from roof to roof, keeping it within sight, and when you jump from one roof in particularly awful repair, though, your right foot goes straight through it, and you yelp out in a loud surprise and pain. That's when a skull turns towards you, and while you were following it, the skull seemed like more of a curiosity than anything else, but now it's coming straight for you, and it's terrifying. You yank your foot out of the rotting roof and turn. You dash across the rooftops, doing your best to avoid stabbing your foot through another one, until you realize that as long as you're atop the houses, this skull can see you for sure. That's assuming it can see at all. But despite its lack of eyes, it's doing a fine job of tracking you so far, and you need to get it out of sight. You leap down an alley and sprint off in a random direction. You take several turns through a maze of streets and byways, huffing and puffing from your race through the town. You find a dark corner well out of the way and plenty distant from where you started out to sit down and rest. The skull lowers itself right in front of you, facing you with its empty eyes and hovering over just out of reach.
"You and you,"
the skull says with a voice that doesn't come from its non-existent lips, but somehow rings in your ears.
"Are you a wizard?"
Experience has taught you that when someone asks you if you are something, they either need that sort of person or want to kill that sort of person. Either way, you're in trouble. You try and read the skull's expression, but there's nothing there to see.
"I am one of the skulls of Skullboy,"
the skull says.
"Are you a wizard?"
Hesitant and uncertain, you give your best guess as to what the right answer might be.
"Yes? Excellent!"
the skull says, floating closer. It emits a green glow from around its edges.
"Prepare to be absorbed!" "Wait!"
you shout as you throw your hands up.
"That sounds fatal and painful! The skulls are beyond pain! I'm not a wizard!"
you cry.
"I lied!"
The skull stops moving towards you and the green glow around it fades.
"You're not a wizard?"
You shake your head emphatically.
"I can't even do card tricks!"
The skull gazes at you for a long moment before it speaks again, and you're too afraid to move, thinking that it might be about to leave you alone as long as you don't run.
"You shall not be absorbed,"
it says. You let out a huge breath, and you realize you didn't even realize that you'd been holding.
"The penalty for lying to a skull is death."
You shove past the skull and sprint away at top speed, screaming the entire way. The skull isn't quite as tenacious about your punishment as you are about escaping it. Eventually, you find a passage to the surface, and the skull fails to follow you. Once you make it to Waterdeep, you realize that when you've escaped the skull, you've failed in your mission entirely. However, you decide that you can keep using your disguise as Maroon the Masked in another city. Baldur's Gate, here you come. The end. I mean, we didn't fail our mission because our mission is really just to not go to jail.
Yeah, exactly. We did. Number one, we're not in jail. Number two, we didn't hear like a baby griffin like leaving this mortal realm or something. Like, this is all, it's salvageable.
Yeah, this is fine. What page was the Skullport?
62 or 64 will be our two other results from Skullport.
Let's go for a thief. Out of the corner of your eye, you've been watching a thief you know from Waterdeep. She's called Peggy, on account of the fact that she has a pig where her left rude leg used to be. Okay.
What was she called before that?
Leggy. She likes to think that she's as quiet and stealthily as the sleekest burglar in the city, even Maroon the Masked, but in fact, she staggers around making so much noise you can hear her coming from streets away. Another thing you know about Peggy is that while she often tries to play herself off like some kind of pirate, she's actually a landlubber and a known member of the Thieves Guild to boot. If anyone knows where the Xanathar lives, or the location of the Thieves Guild headquarters here in Skullport is, it would be Peggy. Unfortunately, you can't just go up and ask Peggy for her help. You're mean to Peggy. After all, she still blames you for the loss of her leg. And it wasn't your fault that you managed to outrun her when an owlbear stormed after you both for stealing its eggs. Well, not entirely. You decided to follow Peggy.
Actually,
back in
that day, her name was Eggy.
if it is an old Eggy Leggy. Oh, my God. Okay. You can't just ask Eggy for help. Eggy, oops. For help, not entirely. You decide to follow Peggy to see if she'll lead you anywhere interesting. As long as she doesn't see you, you shouldn't have to worry about her trying to exact her revenge. You stick to the shadows and watch her roam. She wanders a bit around the city, stopping in a tavern or three along the way, and eventually she leads you to a posh mansion in the best part of Skullport. As she enters the place, you realize that it's way too nice for a thief, as rotten as Peggy, to ever be able to afford. It must be the Xanathar's home. Can't exactly barge in and ask to see the owner, though. You're responsible for him losing his leg. In fact, it would be best if you never crossed paths with him at all. You stake the place out for a while, hoping to see the beholder himself come floating out, so you can sneak in during his absence. Eventually, you get bored with sitting around and watching and decide to start poking around. This sort of impulse has gotten you into plenty of trouble over the years, but it hasn't gotten you killed yet. As you circle the building, you spy a light on a large room, with a wide balcony that looks over the rest of the city. You decide that this is as good a place as any to start. You climb up the wall beneath the balcony and slip onto it as silently as you can manage. You hear voices coming from inside, so you sidle up to the doorway that leads out onto the balcony from the house proper, and you listen. You hear Peggy talking first.
You lined up a trainer for the Griffin. That's great, boss. I never figured you'd be able to get it done that fast.
You underestimate the kind of pull I have in this city.
Another voice says, gravelly, deep, and humanly hollow all at the same time. It could only be the Xanathar. You stifle a shiver and continue to listen.
So,
what? I should go bring up the trainer down here tonight?
Peggy stifles a yawn.
The Griffin's not getting any younger.
Is the trainer even gonna be ready?
With the money I'm paying, he'd better be.
That's such like a dad joke when the contractors are there, you know? Like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you scratch the floor, you're paying. You peer through the doorway from the balcony to see a gigantic floating eye petting a little griffin. Don't like that. Petting a little griffin with one of its 10 prehensile eye stalks. On a desk beside the Xanathar is a huge sack filled with gold coins spilling out of it. The Xanathar has his back to you, but unfortunately Peggy does not. Her eyes go wide in surprise as she sees you. Snatch the money, 75. Snatch the griffin, 77. The griffin?
The griffin makes sense, but I do wonder if the critical path is going to be snatch the money so that we give them a misdirect.
Oh.
I could see that working out in some way, but I think we go with the more traditional option here of see if stealing the griffin steals the griffin rather than stealing the money steals the griffin.
Yeah. These books do love their critical path. Like, because a reminder, it was go to Skullport and it was follow a thief. So.
Yeah, very true.
First, you need to cause a distraction from your real plan to buy your time to get a baby griffin. Wait, to buy your time to get the baby griffin, you slip over towards the desk, signaling to Peggy that you'd split the gold with her if she lets you steal it.
Okay. I see.
So, the moment you pick it up, though, you know she's going to betray you. Before she has a chance to react, you hurl the open sack straight at her. She tries to catch it, but it splashes against her chest instead, sending gold coins scattering everywhere. The Xanathar screeches in surprise at Peggy for a moment. When he does, you leap over and snatch up the baby griffin.
Look at it this way,
you say to the beholder.
You're gonna save so much money not having to hire a trainer.
Give me back that griffin!
The beholder says as you race towards the balcony with the griffin in your arms and the Xanathar firing a ray at you from one of his eyes. That's leaked dialogue from Sonic the Hedgehog 3 in coming to theaters. It, right there. You're going to save so much money not having to hire a trainer. That's such a Sonic the Hedgehog taking from Eggman line.
100%.
Turn to page 35. That's not good. We don't like going back in this book.
No, not typically.
The ray catches you square, and right as you expect to fall over dead, instead, you feel a rush of goodwill towards Xanathar. You wonder if the two of you might become best friends, but your abject terror of being disintegrated drives you to throw whatever mind-altering magic he's using. It does cause you to stagger a bit, though, as you inadvertently step on the little griffin's tail. It screeches and springs to the air with you clutching its back legs. The two of you glide past Xanathar's balcony to a safe landing, well out of reach of the beholder's eye stalks. From there, you race through town and the dungeons above. It is until you are safe in Waterdeep. You find Jalso and her watchers waiting for you when you emerge from the daytime sun.
I'll take that,
she says as she snatches the griffin from your arms.
Plus the credit for its rescue, I'm sure,
you say.
And you get to go home rather than to jail,
she says as she stalks off towards the home of the lord who lost a little griffin.
Everyone's happy, right?
You have to admit, she has a point. The end.
That's a good ending.
That's just a good ending. I do want to, you want to humor?
Absolutely.
What page was it? Was it 75?
I'm afraid to say this is the only one that I didn't write down. Yeah, it looks like this is.
Alrighty. We'll try stealing the gold and see what happens. But that was canonical, good ending, completed the journey, got the griffin, not in jail. Everyone's happy.
It has a sour note to it, despite all of our objectives being completed.
Yeah, it's like kind of terse. I don't know. You point towards the large sack of gold sitting on the Xanathar's desk, which sits behind the beholder out of his line of vision. All of them. Peggy goggles you as you sneak away towards it. But the Xanathar doesn't seem to notice. Maybe beholders can't read humanoid faces all that well, or maybe he's just too preoccupied with the griffin to be bothered with someone as lowly as Peggy. You signal to Peggy that you'll split the money with her if she keeps Xanathar distracted, or at least doesn't point out the beholder that you're robbing him. The thief gives you a discreet nod as you creep further into the room. You don't trust her for an instant, but wow, that's a lot of gold just sitting there. Too big a score to just walk away from. Quietly scoop up the bag, taking care not to jingle in any coins, and you smile at Peggy, who seems impressed by your skill. Few thieves would even attempt such a thing, and here you are, pulling it off underneath the floating bulk of the Xanathar himself. Just as you turn and slip out of the building without a trace, Peggy stabs a finger at you and shouts,
"Boss! It's a thief, and it's not even one of us!"
The beholder spins around to see what Peggy's talking about, but you're already on your way out by the time that happens. You knew you couldn't rely on Peggy, just like she probably knew she couldn't believe you. And you were ready to bolt at the first sign of treachery. She's timed it just right to make it hard on you, though. If she'd said something right away, you'd just have fled. Now you're carrying a heavy sack of coins and have to make it back to the balcony to have your shot at getting away. As you dash for the balcony, a ray stabs from one of the beholder's eyes, and the floor of the balcony disappears, saving you the trouble of leaping over the railing. You would have liked to have saved the little griffin, but that's clearly impossible now for someone who does not want to die. At least the sack of gold you stole should be enough to have you leave Waterdeep behind and set yourself up in a new life far, far away. You hope. The end. So, good ending-ish. I do like the other one better. Really satisfying, like, as far as...
Neither of them is really conclusive. I almost wonder, like, would you entertain the option of going back to 62, the crying child? That's deciding what to do once we get down in Skullport. Because I almost wonder if this has to be the critical path for, like, a flawless thing.
Yeah, I mean, but worth noting, like, I think it's just maybe the way that the first ending we got of those two is written. Because,
very fair.
By all accounts, it's everything we wanted. Or everything we would have expected.
The only thing that we lose out on is directly being rewarded by Lariel Silverhand for it.
It's true. Who knows? 262. You follow the sound of a crying child and you find yourself drawn through the streets of Skullport. It's not likely to be the baby griffin you're looking for, but you find it hard to turn away from a youth in need. And just where does a crying baby griffin, crying baby griffin sound like anyways? When you finally track down the noise, you discover a pack of well-armed bugbears watching over a group of bruised and filthy people chained together into a line being herded off towards the docks. There is one child among them. He's about 5 years old, human, and is wailing at the top of his lungs as he clutches his weeping mother's hand.
You can't sell us to different people!
Jesus Christ. This is what you wanted, Reps. The voice says between sobs,
"You can't split us up! You can't!"
The lead bugbear, an orange-furred fellow with a chunk missing from his ear, sneers down at the boy.
"Shut up,"
he says with a vicious snarl,
"or I'll give you something to really cry about."
That only makes the boy cry louder. Right up until the point at which the irritated bugbear cuffs the child with the back of his hand, bloodying his lip. Jesus. The boy clings to his mother tighter than ever, although his wails taper off into whimpers. The slaver gives a satisfied grunt and pushes the mother along. You glance around, but no one else on the street seems to be paying this scene much mind. Apparently this sort of thing is not uncommon in Skullport, although the very idea of this horrifies you. You decide to follow them at a distance, hoping that you might find an opportunity to do some good, although you're unsure of the exact shape that would take. Turn to page 68. As you near the docks, one of the bugbears glances back and notices that you've been following them through the city. She alerts her leader, who shouts at something you assume is Bugbear. shouts in something you assume is bugbear, but sounds a little bit more like gibberish. You don't scare off that easily, though, especially when you're pretending to be Maroon the Masked. Instead, you step forward and return the bugbear's snarl with relish. This puts the bugbear back on his heels, and he considers how to deal with someone who challenges his authority. The boy chooses at the moment to wave at you, you seeing no reason to wave back. Rude. That's when the other bugbears start to snicker at how their leader seems to have lost control of the situation. He flushes bright red, points at you, and shouts something that has to translate to...
Attack!
Flee on 78, fight on 84.
I mean, we're a rogue. Surely we flee.
You actually want to flee?
I mean, we can fight.
Well, mine was just based off of the, are you brave enough to stand up to the slavers situation before?
You're right.
And you want to run away. Interesting, Raps.
No, see, I've got some people at home to sell.
Yeah.
So I need to go pick them up first.
Sure. Jesus. All right. You're so disgusted by the idea of people owning and selling other people, especially children. Thank God it's got that in writing. Yes, correct. That you draw your short sword and charge straight at the bugbears. Just the ham-fisted phrasing on it, though, is so funny. But I do agree. But also, it's so long-winded. You slash and stab left and right, raising blood where your blade lands. Startled by the ferocity of your attack, the bugbears stagger backwards, flinching away from your blade, all but the leader. You sprint up to him, and he chops at you with his spiked club. Not really what you do with a club, but okay. You dodge the blow by diving towards him, and you drive your blade into his thigh. The leader howls in pain and hops away from you, screaming for the other bugbears to help. They rally to his call, but as the bugbears close ranks around you, the slaves join in your struggle. They swing their chains about them, using them as weapons, and they only drive the bugbears back, except for a particularly slow one who goes down with a large bruise to the side of his head. One bugbear steps up and swings his club at the mother of the boy you heard crying, and she lashes out with her chain and snares his club with the links. Then she yanks backwards with all her might, pulling the weapon from his hands. The slaves roar in triumph and press their advantage. The bugbear leader falls to his knees, his injured leg no longer able to hold his weight. You leap forward and press your blade to his throat.
Call them off!
You shout, hoping he can understand you. His eyes open wide and he shouts something at the other bugbears in their harsh tongue. The rest of them back away from the slaves, giving respectful distance. Won't last long, though. You need to move fast. You spot a ring of keys on the leader's belt and you tear them off to free... Wait, you tear them free and toss them to the mother. She unlocks her son's shackles first, then sets about releasing the rest of her fellow slaves. The boy races over and throws his arm around you, crying again, but tears of joy. Turn to page 93. The bugbears slink off to lick their wounds. You look at the slaves and realize that they're weak and underfed. If they don't leave Skullport right now, they're sure to be recaptured by the same bugbears or someone else. Some of the now ex-slaves are scared to leave with you, thinking that you are going to claim them as your own. The boy cries.
Never! Heroes don't own slaves!
It's true, but...
Hell yeah, kid.
Yeah, so true, kid, but it is such a low bar these days. The laughter from the others break the tension, and they all agree to follow you out of Skullport. You lead them back up to the surface in the fastest route you know, and when you reach Waterdeep, you realize that Jalsa will be furious with you for saving the slaves rather than a baby griffin. Okay? You tell them that you're one of them now. And together you strike out from Waterdeep for parts unknown to find your fortune. The end. I mean...
Great ending?
I mean, like, completely unrelated to the main story, and yet the most, like, wholly satisfying conclusion.
Yeah, like, it's kind of funny. A satisfying conclusion from our own actions as well, whereas the other one, we lost. We lost to Xanathar. Xanathar absolutely, like, ensorcelled us with one of the rays, and then we just got dragged out of there by the griffin. Yeah. Like, we accidentally survived that.
It's so true.
This one, we intentionally went to save people, and then we did it. Good ending.
I mean, it's a good ending. I dig it. Book's good. Book's good and I like them. Is that a hot take? Book's good and I like them?
I don't think so. I think for this whole season, that will be a tepid take because, boy, howdy, I am liking this season, The Endless Quest specifically.
Yeah, Very, very solid. I like playing the rogue a little bit better, which, you know, is good to hear, because they made two cleric books and two rogue books instead of, you know, balancing out the amount of the classes that they have in Dungeons & Dragons. But still, you know, maybe it's because rogues are fun to play, but then what's the excuse, cleric? I don't know. Either way.
It would be interesting if the other cleric was completely different, but true. Like most clerics are the same as every other cleric.
They really dropped the ball by not putting a bard, though. I feel like that's like, that would have been a great, especially like for a book D&D character, I feel like you go bard. Anyway.
Absolutely.
But alas, yeah, I enjoyed it. You got any other closing thoughts on that one in specific?
None especially. I do really like that setting. I really enjoy Waterdeep. Yes. I've been there in a couple of campaigns, and it's nice to see, like, you know, like the yawning portal and the fact that the guy in the yawning portal, the innkeeper, thought that we were Drist-Owen. Like, cool, like, fun additional lore things, but they, in this instance, because we interacted with them for a millisecond and then ran away, feel like, when you read like the plot summary for like a comic book character and it keeps referencing other characters, you know, and you're like, yeah. What? That's here too?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the flashbacks where you're like, oh wow, everybody was actually secretly connected this whole time in a very convenient way. I thought your full stop could say it's Waterdeep. I've been there. I
could have. And
it feels that way.
Should have.
Yeah. But I enjoyed it. Any other, or not any other, who is our wonderful supporter for this episode here today?
Our executive producer for this episode of Turn to Page is Joa. Thank you very much, Joa, for supporting over at Turn to Page Cast. That is patreon.com/turntopagecast. Much appreciated, of course, to each and every person supporting over there. The executive producer for this episode, though, is Joa. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much to Joa. Thank you to all wonderful supporters over at Turn to Page Cast on Patreon, patreon.com/turntopagecast. Huge help. Helps so we can, you know, so that we could get these books. If you want to help support the podcast, it's a really, really, really helpful way to do so. So we can get the nice art. We obviously, you know, we have the nice music commissioned at the beginning. We've got all that. Huge thank you. If you want to help support the podcast in a free way, there are ways to do that as well. Really, namely, if I were to hammer down one right now, helping by subscribing to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/@turntopagecast, because if that hits 1,000 subscribers, we can monetize that channel, which would be a nice, very helpful, passive way to recoup some of the costs for the podcast, because we are, you know, we're putting a lot, you know, the blunt way of putting it is we're putting a lot more in financially than we're getting back. It'd be nice if it was like even. It'd be nice to break even. That's the thing. So that'd be a nice free way to get us to that point. And if you want to go above and beyond, the Patreon is really helpful as well. So anyways, that's that. That's going to do it here for this week. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Adios.